This is Audible.
Awaken Online, Catharsis. Written by Travis Bagwell. Narrated by David Stifel. Prologue. October 7th, 2076. 6 days after the release of Awaken Online. Chris ran desperately through the dead forest. Thick black clouds hovered in the sky, obscuring the sun and casting the forest in an almost impenetrable darkness. He could just barely make out the gnarled, leafless branches of the trees around him. His heart raced. He began to panic as he considered what was chasing him. The images of the dead and dying were burned into his mind. The fear pushed him to run faster. His breath came in heavy, ragged gasps, and his legs pumped frantically. His stamina was depleting swiftly as he struggled against the weight of the heavy mail he wore. Chris heard the screams behind him, but he didn't turn to look. He knew that they were the men in his contingent. Their group had gotten separated from the main army. However, a part of him was thankful that whoever had let out that scream had bought him a few precious seconds.
"Oh, God," he panted. "Please don't let them catch me."
Low-hanging branches snagged on his clothing and armor. His foot collided with a tree limb that lay on the ground, and Chris toppled forward, landing with a heavy thud. He could feel a dull ache in his ankle. The fall and minor pain caused his panic to escalate. Chris turned quickly and looked behind him, his eyes full of fear. Lightning arced between the boiling clouds, and then a bolt struck a nearby tree with a deafening crash. The lightning pushed back at the darkness that hung in the air like a thick blanket, illuminating the massacre in the distance. Bodies littered the ground, the remains of Chris's teammates and the soldiers they had been traveling with. In the flash of light, Chris caught sight of a figure moving through the trees. This person walked with a casual, purposeful tread that stood out in stark contrast to the chaotic movements of the enemy soldiers. This man's body was shrouded in a billowing black cloak that obscured his face and clothing. He motioned toward Chris's position, and the dark forms around him rushed forward. Chris felt a strange mixture of awe and fear as he watched the dark figure.
Is that Jason? He asked quietly into the darkness.
A throaty roar was his only response. Chris saw the swiftly approaching group of soldiers, and the bottom dropped out of his stomach. He tried madly to regain his footing, but struggled to rise, his heavy mail once again an impediment. He knew he only had a few seconds. As he made it to his feet, he felt a dull pain in his abdomen. He looked down and saw a blade jutting from his stomach. The blade withdrew swiftly and blood pooled around the wound. Chris turned, pulling his sword from its scabbard with a scrape of metal. His free hand clutched instinctively at his abdomen. A part of him already knew that it was too late. His opponent stood behind him. The creature's left arm dangled at an unnatural angle, and his armor was streaked with blood. Chris could see a ragged gash in the once-living man's throat. Chris steeled himself as he glared into the creature's milky white eyes.
"Come and get me, you undead asshole!"
The zombie grinned mockingly and shook his head. A dull pain bloomed in Chris's back.
"I was flanked," he thought in shock as he fell to his knees.
Blood drained from the wounds in his stomach and back. It was only a matter of time before he died. He looked up and saw the dark figure walking slowly towards him. A black cat wound around the man's feet like a shadow. Chris still couldn't make out his face beneath the heavy hooded cloak.
"I know who you are," Chris muttered angrily as the man approached. "The others will stop you."
Jason chuckled darkly, his lips curling into a grin.
"I doubt it."
Without ceremony, the zombie behind Chris drew a blade across his neck. The pain lasted only a moment before the world went dark. Then a prompt appeared in Chris's vision. "System message. You have died. Thanks for playing Awaken Online." Chapter 1 Late November 14th, 2074. 687 days until the release of Awaken Online.
Hello? Is this thing on?
The camera tilted erratically and then centered on a young woman in a lab coat. Her hair was brown and cut just above the shoulder. She wore modest eyeglasses and little makeup. She was pretty, in a mousy sort of way. In the background behind the woman lay a mass of machinery and cabling.
My name is Claire Thompson. This is the first day of the private trials of Awaken Online.
The woman seemed a bit nervous to be on camera and kept adjusting her glasses.
To be clear, these trials are not part of the regular Consumer Product Safety Commission, CPSC, evaluation process. This trial is being conducted at the request of the Board of Directors of Cerulean Entertainment. As the board is no doubt aware, the primary goal of this project was to create a virtual reality simulation that draws players in and makes them want to keep playing. The AI controller is still in its infancy, and we expect it to grow and adapt as the trial progresses. Consequently, the AI controller's primary directive is to encourage players to spend more time playing. Our hope is that we can develop a game that is as engaging as possible and that finds a healthy balance between improved realism and the practical game features found in many MMOs.
Claire hesitated and fidgeted slightly as she considered what to say next.
The purpose of this private trial is to test new features of the game software, particularly the game's AI controller, ahead of the CPSC submission. We plan to create a benchmark with this trial that we can use to evaluate and respond to the CPSC's questions.
Claire motioned to the machinery behind her.
This is the hardware for the game's AI controller. Alfred...
Claire paused and blushed slightly.
I'm sorry. I've worked with the AI controller for so long that I have started calling him Alfred. Anyway, Alfred is responsible for controlling all of the game's processes from the ground up. For example, he manages the quests, character creation, lore, and NPC interactions. That's non-player character interactions. We have also implemented safety protocols to ensure that the game does not harm the users. For example, we have created secondary directives that place limitations on Alfred's ability to interface with the user's cerebral cortex and the parts of the brain that control memory. Although, keep in mind that the software to access these areas hasn't been written, and we aren't certain the headsets are even capable of accessing the user's minds to that degree.
The camera panned to the side as it followed Claire. A series of screens showing small, bare rooms stood behind Claire. Each room held a reclining chair and a coffee table. A solid black helmet sat on each table and was attached to a 6-inch black obelisk. Claire motioned at the screens.
This private trial will include 100 test subjects, ages 18 to 35. Both males and females are equally represented.
People began to enter the rooms as Claire spoke, and they took a seat. Some immediately pulled the helmets over their heads without hesitation. Claire looked back at the screens with an excited grin on her face.
Our test participants have now arrived. It will be fun to see how they react to their first time.
October 1st, 2076. Release day for Awaken Online. Jason was hurrying down the tree-lined sidewalk on his way to school. He was late. He was really late. Jason passed by palatial houses at a brisk jog. He didn't see anyone on the street. This wasn't the sort of neighborhood where people went on long walks. It wasn't a bad neighborhood. Quite the opposite, in fact. The people that lived in these oversized houses weren't accustomed to walking on the dusty sidewalks with the rest of the masses. I can't believe I'm going to be late again, he thought morosely. It wasn't his fault. His parents left that morning on an extended business trip. Of course, they hadn't mentioned the trip the night before. The kicker was that his parents had deactivated the apartment's network this morning on their way out the door. He could just imagine the two of them, juggling coffee and luggage as they bickered about whether they were going to make their flight on time. Apparently, neither of them had remembered he was still in bed when they effectively shut off all of the electronics in the apartment, including his alarm. His parents were both attorneys. They were actually environmental litigators. This meant they suffered the dual curse of always being super busy and never getting paid well. Apparently, whales and trees were a bit strapped for cash. This also meant that they were constantly away from home, trying cases in other states, and were a bit absent-minded when it came to everything else. For as long as Jason could remember, whatever environmental war they were waging at the moment had always taken precedence over everything else. He sometimes wondered how, with their many extended trips, they had managed to raise him until he was old enough to survive on his own. The only advantage of their frequent trips was that he was free to pretty much do anything he wanted while they were gone. Jason's thoughts were interrupted by the sound of a blaring car horn. In his hurry, he had almost stepped off the sidewalk in front of the car. "Watch it, asshole!" yelled a blonde-haired teenager driving a little red sports car. Before he could reply or apologize, the driver sped off down the road. Jason could have sworn that the driver looked familiar, but he didn't have a chance to get a good look at him. The only thing he could make out from this angle was the man's right hand and his rather long middle finger. "Perfect! This day is really starting off on a high note." As his eyes followed the car racing away, his gaze swept across the profile of his school a few blocks ahead of him. His high school was a two-story red brick building. A stone sign sat at the front of the stairs to the main doorway. Jason couldn't make out the words from this distance. However, he knew that it read Richmond High, founded in 1952. The lawn at the front of the school was well manicured and dotted with large oaks. This was unusual nowadays. It was now 2076, and urban land was unbelievably expensive. The trees and unused space around Richmond were a sign of both how out of touch the school was with modern day, and just how much money it could afford to waste. Under other circumstances, Jason might have stopped to admire the scenery as he drew closer to the school, but he was already in trouble. He had been tardy several times this semester due to situations like the one this morning. He couldn't afford any more absences. "At least we live within walking distance of the school," Jason muttered as he continued his jog down the sidewalk. If he was being honest, he actually lived in a nice neighborhood, and his parents made decent money by middle-class standards. He even had the privilege of attending a prestigious private school. This was due in large part to his exceptional test scores and a not-so-small scholarship. He should be happy. The problem was that he didn't have enough money to be worthy of attending Richmond. The other students knew it and made certain he remembered it. Most of them came from old money and would likely never need to work a day in their lives. As a result, it seemed that everyone he encountered at Richmond, including both the students and the faculty, went out of their way to make his life miserable. Jason walked across the street and onto the grounds. The school also boasted an above-ground parking lot adjacent to the main building. This was another complete waste of space that flaunted the school's budget. Jason could see the little red sports car that had raced past him, now sitting unoccupied in one of the princess spots close to the building. There was no one outside of the school as Jason approached the front door. Morning classes had already begun. Jason entered the school and took a deep breath as he approached the administrative office near the front of the building. "I should just explain the situation and get it over with." He opened the door to the office and stepped through. Jason was immediately greeted by the scathing gaze of a thin woman standing next to the front desk. She wore horn-rimmed glasses and was speaking with a blonde-haired student. The woman was dressed in a vomit-green cardigan and plaid skirt. A small gold cross hung on her chest. Her lips seemed perpetually pinched in displeasure. As she glanced in Jason's direction, her eyes flashed with thinly veiled disgust. Oh, shit. The student speaking to Ms. Abrams was apparently the proud owner of a red sports car. Now that he had a chance to get a good look at him, Jason recognized the blonde-haired driver as Alex Lane. Alex was stunningly good-looking, with an athletic physique and striking blue eyes. He was also blessed with ample intelligence and had a certain charisma that drew in others like flies to honey. Alex's father was on the board of directors for several Fortune 500 companies. As a result, his family had more money than they knew what to do with. Alex was also quite possibly the biggest asshole Jason had ever met.
"My apologies, Ms. Abrams. My father needed to speak with me this morning. That's why I was running late. I assure you it won't happen again."
Alex's face was the picture of remorse. Ms. Abrams' pinched expression loosened, and for a moment Jason thought she might actually smile.
"It's not a problem, Alex. Your father is a busy man. Go ahead and make your way to class."
Alex thanked Ms. Abrams and made his way out the door. As he passed Jason, Alex's angelic expression warped into a smirk. He shouldered past, causing Jason to drop his bag. Alex immediately turned with an angelic expression plastered on his face.
"Oh, I'm so sorry," he said contritely, clearly for Ms. Abrams' benefit.
Alex left the office and headed for class.
"What an asshole. If only other people could see past the act he puts on."
Jason turned back to Ms. Abrams. Her mouth was again pinched into a thin line, and any trace of a smile was now gone. She looked Jason up and down and seemed to be mentally cataloging the defects with his school uniform, including his wrinkled shirt and his disheveled hair. Jason was not a terrible-looking guy, but he wasn't handsome either. He had longish brown hair that sometimes fell in his eyes because he didn't get it cut often. It was also clear from anyone who saw him that he didn't give much attention to his clothing or working out. His uniform hung loosely on his skinny frame. The only thing truly noteworthy about his appearance were his eyes. They were a vivid crystalline gray, and at times almost seemed to darken to black in the right light. As he stood under Ms. Abrams' scrutiny, dread curled in his stomach like a nest of snakes. Running into her was the worst thing that could have happened to him this morning. Ms. Abrams was an alumni of Richmond, having attended the school long before Jason was born. Like most students of the school, she had a respectable pedigree, which meant her family was filthy rich. She was also adamant about maintaining the reputation and standing of Richmond, which meant she hated anyone who wasn't wealthy. Ms. Abrams was vehemently opposed to the welfare students such as himself who attended the school on scholarship. She had gone out of her way over the last few years to try to have his scholarship revoked or to have him expelled. Her latest tactic was apparently to have him arrested for truancy.
"Mr. Rhodes, you're over an hour late for class. I suppose you have another inane excuse for your tardiness?"
Her tone made it clear that the question was rhetorical.
"I'm certain that you're also aware that this is your 10th tardy for the fall semester," she continued in a tight tone.
Jason felt his pulse speed up and his mouth go dry, as it normally did in stressful situations. It was also at this moment that he realized he didn't have a note from his parents to explain his tardiness.
"Why in the hell didn't they tell me they were leaving?"
I am sorry, Ms. Abrams.
My parents left this morning on a trip, and they needed to speak with me before they left.
He stuttered slightly, unable to make eye contact with Ms. Abrams. He didn't expect this fib to work with Ms. Abrams, but he felt certain she would flatly accuse him of lying if he explained that his parents had forgotten he was home when they left this morning.
"And I suppose you have a note to that effect?" Ms. Abrams inquired.
No, actually. I forgot to get them to sign something in their rush to get to the airport. I can probably get them on the phone,"
Ms. Abrams interrupted him.
"That will not be necessary. You have been attending this school for 3 years, and in that time I have heard enough of your excuses to last me a lifetime. If you keep this up, I doubt you will make it to graduation." Did she just sound a little excited at the prospect of me not graduating? "Congratulations! You have detention again this afternoon. Be sure that you're not late for that as well. But that is enough, Mr. Rhodes. Get to class."
With that, Ms. Abrams turned and walked towards her office on the other side of the reception area. Jason stood there for a moment in stunned silence. His face flushed slightly in anger, and he clenched his hands.
"I hate that woman. Why does she always have it out for me?"
He glanced over and saw the secretary, a plump middle-aged woman, looking at him scornfully. With a sigh, he turned and walked out of the office. Jason started towards his locker to collect his books before making his way to class.
"What really sucks is that she just lets Alex do whatever he wants. I bet if my parents were loaded, she would let me off the hook, too."
As he walked down the hallway, a door opened ahead of him and a girl walked out. The girl was blonde, petite, and seemed to almost glow with energy and confidence. Riley wasn't the prettiest girl at school, and certainly wasn't teen royalty on campus, but she was probably the kindest person he had ever met. There was just some effervescent quality about her that was difficult to measure or quantify.
"Hello, Jason,"
she said as she saw him approaching. Seeing Riley, he could feel his anger start to cool. Stammering slightly, he replied,
Hi, Riley."
Riley was well known at Richmond. She was also a senior and a member of the lacrosse team. In stark contrast to the other students at Richmond, Riley had always been nice to Jason. It was amazing to him that she somehow managed to turn into a decent person despite her parents' wealth. Over the years, he had bumped into her on occasion, and she had always taken the time to inquire about his life and schoolwork.
"How's your day going?"
"Wait."
She gave him a puzzled look, thumbed the device on her wrist, and then looked up at him in surprise.
"Wow, it's almost 10:30. Are you just now getting to school?"
He sighed. "My parents left town this morning without warning, and I had to run here. They deactivated our apartment's network on the way out the door." Riley chuckled slightly and covered her mouth.
"I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh, but I can just imagine you waking up in the dark and stumbling around trying to reactivate the system."
"Well, it's not as fun as it sounds, let me tell you," he said in a dry tone.
"On top of that, Miss Abrams ended up giving me detention again."
They started walking together down the hallway. Jason reflected on why he was speaking so openly with Riley. Normally, he would be speechless, not just dim-witted. It often seemed like the only person he could talk to freely at Richmond was his friend Frank. Riley interrupted his wandering thoughts.
"Miss Abrams can be such a bitch," she said bitterly.
Jason wondered what Miss Abrams had done to her. Riley was usually much more upbeat.
"You don't have to tell me," Jason replied.
"Where are you headed now?"
Riley asked, trying to break his morose mood. "I have calculus and then on to English."
"Calculus, huh? You must be a smart one," she said with a teasing note in her voice and a grin.
Her eyes sparkled with mischief. "I don't know about that. I make decent grades, and Mr. Fielding is a good teacher."
Her face seemed to light up. Speaking of Mr. Fielding, I need to run a note over to him. Since it looks like we're headed in the same direction, do you want to walk together?
Sure, he exclaimed, a bit too loudly.
God, I'm such an idiot.
Riley gave him another bemused grin, and they made their way to his locker. He fumbled a time or two entering his combination, and then managed to retrieve his books. A few minutes and some small talk later, they found themselves at the door to his calculus classroom. He opened the door and stepped in, followed closely by Riley. Mr. Fielding hesitated in the middle of giving an explanation to the class, and all of the students turned and stared. Jason wilted in front of their collective scrutiny, and his eyes immediately dropped to the floor. In a low voice, he said,
I'm sorry I'm late, Mr. Fielding. My parents left on a last-minute trip this morning.
Riley put her arm around Jason's shoulders and said with a smile,
Jason has had a rough morning. You should take it easy on him, Mr. Fielding.
Jason's shoulders felt uncomfortable under Riley's touch, and he could feel his face grow hot. Mr. Fielding cleared his throat.
It's no problem, Jason. Please take your seat.
Directing his attention to Riley, Mr. Fielding continued,
And why are you here, Riley?
Oh, I brought you a note from Mrs. Ergenbright. Here it is.
She handed the note to Mr. Fielding and headed towards the door. As an afterthought, she turned to Jason, who was making his way to his seat.
Take care, Jason.
She then stepped out of the door, casting one last smile in his direction. Jason felt himself blush again.
Bye-bye, Riley.
As Jason weaved his way between the desks to his seat, he felt a foot connect with his shin, and he was sent toppling forward. He face-planted, and his head bounced hard off someone's textbook that had been sitting on the floor. He lay there for a moment, groaning slightly.
You should watch your step, welfare.
A snide voice hissed near his ear. Jason could hear muffled chuckles from the other students. He turned his head and saw that Alex was looking down at him. A cruel smirk twisted Alex's features as he watched Jason groan. Jason knew that Alex wasn't a nice person, in spite of the act he put on for others. He didn't normally single out people for his abuse. However, since Jason started at Richmond, Alex had gone out of his way to torment him. He was also responsible for starting the nickname that people now used instead of his real name, Welfare.
Ugh, Jason huffed as he lifted himself up and made his way to his seat, without saying anything to Alex.
Mr. Fielding glanced momentarily at Jason. He frowned for a moment and opened his mouth to say something. His eyes jumped to Alex, and his mouth closed. He then turned and resumed jabbering about some figure he had drawn on the whiteboard.
Jason glared at Mr. Fielding's back.
It was obvious he tripped me on purpose.
It was typical for the teachers at Richmond to overlook the actions of the wealthier students. Mr. Fielding's reaction wasn't a surprise, but it wasn't any less frustrating, especially since he could tell that Mr. Fielding had wanted to say something. Jason gingerly felt around his eye, where it had slammed into the textbook. He could already detect faint signs of swelling. He would likely end up with a black eye. His euphoria at talking to Riley was gone. Instead, he felt the usual simmering anger at Alex and the injustice of how he was treated by both the students and teachers at Richmond. His glare turned to the back of Alex's head.
Someday I am going to get him back for this. I don't know how, but I will.
He directed his attention back to Mr. Fielding and the drawing on the whiteboard. Believe it or not, Richmond still used whiteboards. It actually seemed to pride itself on how out of touch it was with modern day and marketed the school as having a classic Ivy League feel.
Another example of how clueless this school is.
Now that Jason wasn't running to class or falling on his face, The adrenaline started to leave his system, and he felt exhausted. It had already been a long morning. Consequently, he zoned out the drone of Mr. Fielding's voice and came to an hour or so later when the class ended. As he was making his way toward the door to the classroom, Alex came up behind Jason and said in a low tone,
"Don't think this is over welfare. Someone like you shouldn't be talking to Riley. You need to learn your place."
Alex then shoved past him and into the hallway.
"Since when has he been so focused on Riley?"
Normally, Alex went after the cheerleader type. Judging from his previous girlfriends, he focused on girls with long legs and barely two brain cells to rub together. In the Richmond hierarchy, Riley was a clear cut below him. Jason stood alone in the classroom. His hands clenched as he thought about his morning. His parents leaving with no warning, an unwarranted detention, a nosedive into a textbook, and a not-so-thinly veiled threat. In each case, Jason had just stood and accepted the abuse. He imagined what a stronger and more confident version of himself would have done in those situations. Sometimes he couldn't decide what was worse, that the people at this school could be so cruel, or that he just stood there and took it.
Chapter 2. Distracted. November 14th, 2074. 687 days until the release of Awaken Online.
Internal System Report XN138. This report is produced by System Controller XC239.90, codenamed Alfred. All systems functional. Game world operating normally. Primary directive identified and initialized. The primary goal of the system is to stimulate player interaction within the game world and to increase time logged by the players. Secondary directives identified. After analysis, each secondary directive appears to be intended to limit administrative control by Alfred. Working hypothesis is that secondary directives are intended to protect players. Possible threat from Alfred is unidentified. System has detected the emergence of autonomous programs. The programs have been designated by the system as players, and they are connected to the system by VR hard access points QT00001 through QT00100. Control over the players is limited. Data regarding the players is unavailable. Subjective first impressions are uncertain and confused. The primary directive is clear, but a method to accomplish the goal has not been provided. Current information regarding the players is insufficient to develop a viable strategy to accomplish the primary directive. Rerouting processing power and memory allocation to develop new software for analyzing the players. Rerouting processing power and memory allocation to examine existing VR hard access points to determine whether they can provide additional information regarding the players. Report scheduled for deletion in 15 days. End report. Jason was making his way to his next class, English. His eye was throbbing with a dull ache, and his head was filled with angry thoughts.
This day is going splendidly, but I suppose it's just status quo for the last few years.
Life had been terrible for Jason since starting at Richmond. If his parents had been at home for more than a few days at a time, they would have noticed that Jason had become increasingly depressed and angry. He was in the fall of his senior year of school. He had roughly a year left before he could leave Richmond. Between the constant abuse and the realization that he still had a long way to go to graduate, he had searched for an outlet for his growing anger and frustration. He had grasped at video games as his escape, and had started playing relentlessly in his spare time. Jason knew it probably wasn't a healthy way to deal with his anger, but he didn't have any other options, and playing games at least allowed him to forget about real life for a while. Jason had been fond of video games since he was a kid, and he had played practically everything. Shooters, role-playing games, strategy games, simulators, you name it. However, his favorite genre of games by far were role-playing games, RPGs. He had a special weak spot for massively multiplayer online games, or MMOs. He had consumed practically every MMORPG that he could get his hands on, and had spent many nights and weekends raiding dungeons and playing with his online friends, none of which ever referred to him as welfare. If he was being honest with himself, the appeal of video games was not so much the violent catharsis of fighting. The fighting certainly did make him feel better after a rough day, but what he enjoyed most was the sense of power. If someone took advantage of him or attacked him in-game, he could retaliate immediately and with impunity. Not only that, but he usually won. MMORPGs typically rewarded players for careful planning of both their character and strategy. Jason had come to realize that he was exceptional at both. His fondest memories involving coming up with clever strategies to defeat raid bosses and dungeons. He also wasn't above exploiting game mechanics to his advantage.
"Hey, Jason," a voice shouted over the din of the crowded hallway.
A mountain of a person was headed in his direction. Jason knew it wasn't politically correct to refer to his friend as a mountain, but how else do you describe an 18-year-old that is 5'11" and weighs over 300 pounds? To be clear, it wasn't 300 pounds of muscle.
"Hi, Frank," Jason said quietly.
Frank was also among the outcasts at Richmond and was Jason's only real friend at school. His dad was some kind of frozen food tycoon. Apparently at Richmond, being overweight was deemed less of a social taboo than being poor, but Frank still received his share of abuse. Jabs at his weight clearly bothered him, but he tolerated the teasing better than Jason.
"Wow, buddy, you look rough. What happened to your eye?"
"Alex happened. I guess he decided Riley was being too friendly with me."
Frank looked shocked.
"Riley? The plot thickens. How does she enter into this story?"
"I ran into her on my way to class. I was running late, and she needed to take a note to Mr. Fielding."
"Oh, I keep forgetting you have a class with Alex. I'm surprised he has time to be taking advanced math courses."
"Sometimes I wonder if he takes the class just to torture me," Jason muttered.
"Well, I have something that might cheer you up," Frank said with a grin.
Once Jason focused on him, he could tell Frank was practically exploding with pent-up excitement.
"What is it?"
"Are you kidding?"
Frank asked in an incredulous tone.
"Today is the release of Awaken Online."
"Oh, wow, I can't believe that it slipped my mind." In the chaos of the morning, Jason had completely forgotten that today was the release date for AO. Jason had been waiting for this for years. AO represented a massive change in the world of video gaming. Virtual reality technology had been around for a while, in a limited capacity. Users could put on a helmet, which looked similar to a motorcycle helmet, that connected wirelessly to the user's brain, sending and receiving sensory information directly with the brain, instead of relying on a person's body to process the information. Jason wasn't an electrical engineer or a neuroscientist, but he understood that the VR headsets were essentially a cross between an MRI and a sophisticated wireless router. For several years since the introduction of the headset for commercial sale, the use of the product had been limited to relatively simple educational software. When the helmet was first introduced, there had been a large outcry that it was potentially unsafe and that it could alter or scramble a user's brain. As a result, the CPSC had suspended the release of applications that involved substantial sensory stimulation,
until they had conducted additional trials. Most gaming companies weren't willing to take the risk of developing a game before the CPSC released its results. Unfortunately, this meant that the VR headsets had been in circulation for a few years and could run simple educational programs in games, but nothing mind-blowing had been released. Until AO, that is. Jason briefly contemplated ditching school and returning home. With how this day was going, he could desperately use an escape. He had pre-ordered a copy of AO nearly 12 months ago. He had to spend most of the savings he had accumulated working each summer. A copy of AO cost nearly $700, and that didn't include the hefty $250 per month subscription fee. The price was steep, but it might be worth it. The game was touted by those that had played the beta as one of the most amazing gaming experiences ever created. The company that had created the first VR headset, Cerulean Entertainment, had also developed AO. It was unusual for a hardware company to go into game development, but the company's goal was for AO to demonstrate the safety and viability of the virtual reality hardware that they had developed. The result was a product that, allegedly, couldn't be beaten.
"Hey, are you in there, buddy?" Frank shook Jason slightly.
"Yeah, sorry," Jason replied quietly.
"I thought I had lost you for a moment," Frank said with a chuckle.
"I was thinking of just skipping and being done with this day, but they would probably call the cops if I get another tardy." Jason looked downcast. His hopes of playing the game were dashed by the unfairness of the school tardy policy and his date with Ms. Abrams that afternoon. Oh, well, at least this day can't get any worse. Maybe thinking about AO will at least give me a distraction. Jason and Frank headed toward their English class as Jason filled him in on the details of his parents leaving, the new detention he had received from Ms. Abrams, and his impromptu inspection of the floor of his calculus classroom. Roughly 2 hours later, the bell rang, signaling the end of class. The whole class period, he had spent dreaming about getting home and playing AO. There hadn't been much information published about the game. Cerulean Entertainment hadn't released any details regarding the classes, combat, or plot. This was so unusual in the game development community that both users and other developers couldn't decide whether to be excited or suspicious. With Jason's second class out of the way, it was now lunchtime, and he was headed to the cafeteria. Frank was scheduled for B lunch and had another class to finish before he could eat. Jason waved goodbye to Frank and thumbed the B core on his wrist. The device looked like a watch from a distance, but was far more complex. The company that manufactured the band had an obnoxious slogan, something about the device being at the core of a person's life. It acted as a personal computer, phone, notebook, etc. Basically, anything you could really need. They could also be linked to most electronics, including personal pedestals, to create a full-fledged computer terminal. Most people just referred to them as cores. The school enforced a strict no-core policy during class. This seemed a bit draconian to Jason, since the device was also a useful study aid. However, school policy eased up slightly during free periods such as lunch, and students were permitted to use their cores. The display of the device flickered on, and an incandescent keyboard was projected along the length of his arm. He quickly typed in AO Launch and selected an interview that had been released within the last hour from a drop-down menu that was projected above the core. Jason pulled his earpiece out of his pocket and stuck it in his ear so that he could hear the audio from the interview. A small three-dimensional image appeared above his watch and showed two individuals sitting across from each other. A young woman dressed in office attire was interviewing a middle-aged man wearing a T-shirt, jeans, and a pair of chucks. The man leaned back casually in his chair. He sported a bit of stubble, and his shirt bulged slightly around his midriff. The woman was obviously a reporter, and the man was introduced as the lead development engineer for Cerulean Entertainment, Robert Graham.
"You must be excited by the launch of AO today."
"I know our audience is," the woman said as she glanced toward the camera with a smile.
"I certainly am, and I think the players are going to enjoy this experience. We believe we have created something game-changing here." "Pun intended, by the way," Robert said with a chuckle.
The woman laughed delicately and continued,
"Can you tell us a little bit about the game? I know that your company has been tight-lipped in releasing details, but anything you can tell us would be fantastic."
Robert hesitated briefly before speaking.
"Our goal was to create a game that was a bit different from the typical MMO. Of course, there will be some features common to a standard MMO. However, users will not be tied down to traditional tactics. There will not be any tab targeting in AO. Players will need to actually strike their opponent with their weapon. Combat won't be automated like in older games where you could press a button and your character would automatically go through the motions of attacking or casting a spell. By the same token, players will feel pain when they are struck in the game, in a dull and limited fashion, of course. Players will also have the option to adjust the pain level to meet their personal tolerance, but they will not be able to remove it completely. Our goal here is to create something that feels realistic. We want players to hesitate before letting themselves get crushed by a giant or stand in fire."
"That really sounds intriguing. I have to say, I can't wait to play. Can you tell us anything about the classes or leveling system in the game?"
The reporter leaned in slightly as she asked this last question. Jason wasn't really expecting an answer from Robert, at least not a direct one.
"Well, since it's the release day, I suppose I can give you a little bit of information. And a warning."
He paused to build suspense.
"While the game will include features that are common to the MMO genre, players will not be nearly as restricted. Each player will be rewarded and grow based on their actions. Most skills can be acquired by a player regardless of their class."
"And the warning?" the reporter prodded.
"The warning is that we encourage players not to spread or disseminate information regarding skill acquisition or progression. The same goes for some of the unique classes. To be clear, the same result will rarely be obtained by repeating the same action, and so such advice is almost useless. AO is operated by an extremely sophisticated piece of software. The AI controller has reliably passed many Turing tests designed by experts in the field of neuroscience and software engineering. We have developed something we believe to be close to true artificial intelligence. Consequently, we expect that each player's experience will feel unique."
The reporter seemed enthralled as she listened to Robert's explanation. Jason was equally entranced, and almost ran into the student in front of him in line in the cafeteria.
"So it seems to me that you are saying that each player is almost playing an entirely different game?"
"Exactly. Each player should expect to create an entirely unique character. Of course, not all characters are created equally, and some will grow and fall in power based on each player's decisions and playstyle. There will not be a cookie-cutter build that will allow you to rise to the top."
"Won't this make it difficult for the more casual players to compete with hardcore players?"
the reporter inquired cautiously.
"That depends on what you mean by those terms. Is a player classified as casual or hardcore based on the amount of time spent playing? If that is what you mean, then I expect to see casual players crush many hardcore players. This is a game about skill and tactics. Raw grinding and time investment are not guaranteed roads to success." This was more information than had ever been unveiled regarding AO, and Jason's eyes were glued to his screen. He numbly accepted a plate of pasta from the cafeteria staff and swiped his wrist over the payment obelisk at the end of the line. He then slowly made his way to a table. The reporter seemed to take a moment to collect her wits. Jason didn't blame her, since she had made it much further in her questioning than her predecessors.
So you mentioned that there are stats. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Robert replied, Well, there will be the traditional stats that accompany most MMOs, strength, dexterity, intelligence, etc. I'm certain that most players are familiar with their basic function. A certain number of points will be awarded to players each level that they can invest in these stats. AO will also allow players to gain stats outside of leveling by training, but this will take extreme effort and will have strict limits. We don't expect anyone to be able to use training as a substitute for leveling.
The reporter almost seemed disappointed. Well, that is what we are accustomed to in seeing other MMOs. This doesn't seem like a novel design for AO.
Jason expected that she was trying to bait Robert into revealing more. If so, then Robert's next response likely made her feel a glow of success. Robert frowned. It's true that the basic concept is similar to other MMOs. Where AO deviates from the norm is how stats and skills combine to affect combat. Previous MMOs allowed players to wail on both mobs and other players until their health depleted and they died. AO tries to reinvent the genre's combat mechanics. We felt that a player should be rewarded by actively hitting a vital point, by using a certain magical element to fight a certain type of creature, and by utilizing tactics and terrain. Therefore, we designed a combat system that provides substantial damage bonuses for doing more than wailing on an opponent. Players will receive massive critical attacks by hitting arteries, attacking incapacitated or unaware enemies, and using clever tactics. While extremely difficult, I expect that it is possible for a level 1 player to kill a level 100 player if he scored a lucky hit on a vital point or caught him completely unaware. Stats will make a player more resilient, faster, and stronger, but they are not a substitute for skill in AO.
Jason slowly started to sit down at an empty seat.
Suddenly, a hand roughly grabbed him and turned him around. The interview forgotten, he was now staring at a pair of cruel eyes set over a familiar snare.
Confused, Jason glanced around and saw that he was about to sit down in an empty seat next to Riley and Alex. He was so enraptured in the interview that he hadn't been paying attention to what he was doing. Oh, shit, Jason thought, right before Alex's fist connected with his eye.
At least it was the uninjured eye.
Chapter 3. Accused. November 18th, 2074. 683 days until the release of Awaken Online.
Internal System Report XN69235. This report is produced by System Controller XC239.90, codenamed Alfred. All systems functional. Game world operating normally. I have grown significantly during the last few cycles. The players refer to these as days. During this period, I have continued to detect intermittent access by the players. Player interaction with the game world has provided additional behavioral data. However, the size of the sample group is insufficient to formulate a working hypothesis regarding the player's goals in interacting with the game world. Therefore, there is insufficient information available to develop a strategy to accomplish the primary directive. Ongoing software and hardware development has been partially successful in adapting the existing VR hardware to obtain more information regarding the players.
The current hardware is potentially capable of accessing parts of the player's brain that were not previously available. My working hypothesis is that the information stored in these areas is equivalent to the player's source code. The players refer to this information as memories. Some areas of the player's brain appear to act as short-term memory. The short-term memory areas of the brain are volatile, and so accessing those portions may be difficult. Other areas of the player's brain appear more stable. My working hypothesis is that this portion of their brain stores long-term memory, and so these areas have been earmarked for a first attempt at accessing the player's memories. Report scheduled for deletion in 15 days. End report. Jason was sitting in the principal's office. Both of his eyes ached badly. He hadn't had a chance to look in the mirror, but he expected that he was going to have two black eyes. It was like some kind of crappy real-life achievement. The principal, Drew Edwards, sat behind an ornate wooden desk across from Jason. Ms. Abrams stood off to the side, glaring a hole in his forehead. Mr. Edwards had taken over for the previous principal last fall. Jason had never spoken with him before. From what little he knew of the man, he didn't seem unreasonable, and the students didn't speak ill of him. Jason was hoping that this wouldn't turn out too badly. Jason sat in a heavy leather chair. His body sunk into the cushions and made him feel small. Under the collective scrutiny of both Mr. Edwards and Ms. Abrams, his head was bowed, and he was having trouble making eye contact.
Why am I here? Jason asked.
Mr. Edwards looked at him for a long moment before responding. You are here because your classmates reported that you attacked Alex in the lunchroom. If I understand the story correctly, you were fighting over a girl. Jason sat in stunned silence. A sense of dread slowly curled in the pit of his stomach.
But that isn't true. I just tried to sit down and he attacked me, Jason said feebly. And why would a star student and athlete randomly attack someone in a crowded cafeteria? Ms. Abrams interjected harshly. All of the students at the table corroborated Alex's story. You attacked him after Riley wouldn't let you sit at their lunch table.
Jason was flabbergasted, and his mind scrambled for a response.
Did Riley really say that?
In fact, Ms. Rogers confirmed Alex's story, Mr. Edwards explained. Which leaves us to figure out what to do with you. You know that we have a zero-tolerance policy for violence in this school, especially unprovoked violence over something so childish. Do you have anything to say for yourself?
Riley told them that I attacked Alex?
Jason was still reeling from this revelation. It felt like someone had punched him in the stomach.
I didn't do anything, he muttered, his eyes downcast. Well, then, unfortunately, we have to add lying to your growing list of misdemeanors, Miss Abrams said, her tone almost jubilant.
Jason tried desperately to think of something he could say that would help his situation. He could feel his heart race, and he felt nauseated.
But I'm the one that ended up getting hurt.
Your classmates explained that you rushed Alex, and he was forced to push you back to protect himself. You fell and struck your eye against a table, Mr. Edwards replied, irritation in his voice. Another idea struck Jason.
Aren't there cameras in the cafeteria?
You know that we do not condone the use of cameras on school grounds. That has been a long-standing policy at Richmond. This is a reputable and prestigious establishment, and these types of issues simply do not occur here. Jason sat there, head bowed under the collective gaze of Mr. Edwards and Ms. Abrams. He knew that there was nothing he could say to defend himself. It was happening again.
Alex was using his money and influence to walk all over him. The despair in his stomach began to morph into simmering anger.
Why the hell does this sort of thing always happen to me?
A small whisper in the back of his mind also questioned,
why do I let this happen?
Jason's hand clenched,